May 6, 2019, it's the Watt from Pedro Show.
Thank you. like a king, baby. Filter for the sick and lazy. All she knows is the whispering mirror on her phone. Faced with a sad reflection, devoid of a real connection. Now her feet retreats to the stutter and groan. Clickbait. Everyone knows you're clickbait. Everyone knows you're clickbait. Everyone knows you're clickbait. Everyone knows you're clickbait. A junkie for your admiration. Empty without affirmation. Hooking on the corner with a selfie shot squarely by a wall. I stumble in the wrong direction. A crash, now a re-election.
For Pedro Show. I'm going to see Brother Matt Thursday. He's recuperating from his vacay. In the meantime, I'll start out the show with welcome, which is what I want to say from John Coltrane to my guest, because I'm not man alone. I'm in my pad, but through the wonders of those Estonian software engineers and their Skype engineer invention, I got Abby Travis.
Hey, what?
Hey, are you calling from Hollywood?
Yes, I'm in the I'm in Hollywood, Fairfax District.
Okay, talking. Have I been to that pad?
Yeah, I think you
have. Yeah, I got a piece of software that something out of miles it pukes, so that don't be freaked out. I remember that pad. Yeah, absolutely. We had some jams there.
Exactly. Exactly.
And in fact. It was kind of like a dose thing with two bass, but you've got a duo, brand new, and that's what we're going to talk about. In fact, after John Coltrane, we played Clickbait, probably a song we wouldn't have written in the 80s.
True.
There was other ways to do the same fucking retarded behavior, but It's just doing that. And it's called Sumo Princess. But let's go before that, Ab, because you've never been on the show, and I want people to know about your journey through music. What's your earliest musical recollection?
Gosh, I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is sort of staring at the cover of Sgt. Pepper's while listening to it on vinyl, you know? Like, I was kind of obsessed with that album when I was a kid, and I would just, you know, look at the cover and try and figure out who all the celebrities were and listen to it over and over again.
Is that a record you got yourself, or was it in the pad?
It was in the house. My parents had it. They weren't really that into music, but they had, like, Beatles records, and, you know, they had, like, Nielsen, The Point. I know my brother was really into that one. And
somebody just asked me about that. Like, they want to do a new version of Harry Nilsson, right?
Yeah.
In some kind of animation. I remember it. Kind of an existential thing or something. And he came to a gig last week. I did with Second Man. He said, "What? We want to do a new version of this. Do you want to be the narrator?" What a coincidence. I haven't thought about it for a long time. So they weren't like players. They were more listeners.
Yeah, and not even super listeners. Like, my mom would just listen to the news all the time, and then my dad was kind of, you know, more into, like, country. Like, he loves, like, Johnny Cash and Hank Williams and that kind of stuff. And then I pretty much, a lot of music that I got into later was, you know, either from, like, you know, kids at school or my brother or whatever.
Yeah, but how did the Sgt. Pepper record get there then?
My parents had that. I mean, the Beatles, sorry, I gotta take these notifications off. My husband's texting me about toilet paper.
Yeah, that's important shit to share.
You know, these are things we all have in common, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, the Beatles were so. That's not even music at a different level, you know?
Yeah, it's just you should surprise him with some, like, triple aught sandpaper.
What?
It's like fucking rocks. Okay. The Beatles crossed a lot of lines. You're right. All kinds of people, like, especially in those days, I remember. But do you remember the first record you got for yourself?
Yes. The first single I ever bought, it was one of two singles. One was Le Freak by Chic.
Oh, yeah.
7-inch. And then the other one was King Tut by Steve Martin.
Kind of a joke song.
Yeah, but I was like a kid, and I just thought that was the funniest thing ever, and I loved it, you know?
But,
and
then
I
also thought, like, he was really good on the...
What?
Supposedly he was really good on the banjo.
Yeah. That's
a real musician. I think he went to Long Beach State, maybe, or some... He's some Southern California kind of guy. But, so... You know, jokes... Look, Dr. Demento, right? Remember on Sundays?
Sure, we used to listen to him all the time as kids.
Absolutely, and there was kind of a weird connection between him and Rodney and the Rock in a way, in the old days. So, do you remember the first gig you went and saw play?
It was either, I think it might have been, my mom took us to a couple gigs when we were kids. One of them was Ray Charles at the Universal Amphitheater, and we saw, like, John Denver once. And we saw the Village People and Gloria Gaynor once, which was totally amazing. That was amazing.
You know what I heard
and then, like, Killmania. Those were, like, the gigs that I saw as a child.
You know, I was reading about Ray Charles and guys who played in his band, that he liked to drag the tempo. One guy said you could park a bus in between the bar, the beats.
Huh. I actually did a gig last year with this guy that had played sax with Ray Charles. He was a really nice guy. I forgot his name.
You know who lived on his block growing up?
No.
Spotsky.
Oh, wow. Now,
he told me, get this, this was in Leimert Park.
Okay.
And he said, Ray Charles once got a speeding ticket. He had a buddy in the car with him, and he was racing up and down the street. Got a speeding ticket. Yeah, in that trip. So, there's no instruments at home. And is Dave playing anything?
You know, there was, like, an acoustic guitar around. My dad used to play, like, he knew, like, one Andre Segovia song, so that was, like, his jam.
Oh, he would play that. Play a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then,
he was a cameraman, right? For
CBS? Yeah.
He was
Yeah, exactly. And then we took piano lessons when we were children, both my brother and I. Oh,
so was there a piano in the house?
Yeah, I think by the time I was about like 6 or 7, there was a piano in the house that I still have, actually.
Now, what was your experience? Was it a good one or a bad one?
It was pretty good overall, you know. I liked it. I didn't have any like mean ruler hitting teachers or anything like that.
I know you can play very well now, so it stuck with you.
Yeah, I wouldn't call myself a pianist, but I do, with the exception of Sumo Princess, all the other stuff that I used to write for my solo stuff, I would write on piano.
Absolutely. I'm going to play most of that at the end. It's not like you did that cover of the Rocky Horror Show and Hate Song. Yeah, didn't you do Lightning Square or something?
Yeah, but that's not a cover. That's an original.
Oh, it is. It might be a...
It just seems like it, I guess.
Yeah, because, you know, he wrote that in the 50s, right? So a lot of that music, he wasn't allowed to put it on until, I guess they did it in England in the early 70s.
Really?
Yeah, Rocky Horror Picture Show was around. That's why that music sounds kind of 50s.
But there was also that thing in the 70s, like with Happy Days, where people were totally obsessed with it.
Oh, no. I know, totally... Well, what it is the marketing thing. So that generation is, because I remember my pop when that series came on, he said, boy, those were not happy days. But they market towards the aging generation. Just like when I was a boy, it was all nothing but World War II movies because that generation was aging.
Right.
They've kind of lost that.
Frank Zappa once said that the time period between something happening initially and becoming like cool and retro would eventually get smaller and smaller to the point that like a culture would become a vacuum. And I think that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, because they don't, not that was a great thing, like marketing to a demographic, like it's just a big fucking number. And also just bringing nostalgic, sentimental, what do they call it, schmaltz. Heavy on the schmaltz. Wow, so that, for some reason I was thinking that was, because I haven't seen that movie in a while, and it's a good one. In fact, I remember when it used to play at the Tiffany, right?
Uh-huh.
And a lot of those people I saw at the first Pumpkins. My sister brought me, you know, this was in the late 70s. And
now, did you get dressed up?
But I didn't know anything about it, okay, so I'm there and I see the people, they kind of take over. And I didn't know, like, you learn all the words and you shout them out before they say it on the movie and squirt guns and the toast. And it was a whole, it was kind of like a takeover, especially the Time Warp dance, right? Everybody ran down there. No, it kind of freaked me out, but I could see how that was kind of foundational to the movement because it was kind of like, you know, compared to an arena rock show, it was kind of like that. You took over. And so anyway, I saw some of those people, right? I can't remember their name. You know, everybody had funny names. I was born with one. But what about in school? Were you in the choir? Were you in the orchestra or the marching band or shit like that?
Yeah, I did some choir stuff, and then I did not have good musical experiences in school. Like I kept getting kind of, I remember being in choir, and then it was just kind of like, oh, you should get a solo, but we're going to give it to the senior because they're graduating. Like I kept kind of getting, although I did, actually this was kind of fun when I went to like 7 different schools because of busing and we moved once, but one of the schools I went to was this like, magnet school, and the school play was Annie, so I was Annie's understudy, and the girl that got to play Annie, like, it was totally like Welcome to Hollywood, like her dad managed Donna Summer, so it was already like, even in 5th grade, like, this is the way it's gonna go, you know what I mean? Like, so I was Annie's, although she could really sing, I have to say she could sing, but I was her understudy, and then I got to play Molly, so somewhere there's a really funny picture, they were nice and let me do the performance of Annie one night, and I'm singing like very with this really earnest look on my face and this little patchwork dress, and there's this little kid in like the dog costume because he played the dog sitting there covering his ears with his hands. It's like the funniest photo. It's so 70s. It's very funny.
Not like he's digging it.
No, he wasn't feeling it at all. Yeah.
Here, I'm gonna play something from the Sumo Princess. Kill the King.
stavamo perdendo tempo, forse è
other far. Falta verme tallesar.
Watford Pedro show. Yeah, Kill the King from Sumo Princess off the new, their debut release, I should say.
We got a couple singles out, but it's our debut album.
Sorry.
That's cool.
And I, you know, we're going to get to that with Gene, great drummer man and stuff, but I still want to get in the early days. After that, we had Ava Mendoza with her Unnatural Ways and Trying to Pass, her new album. Arabia's Saludada from Milano with their latest album, Grande Suceso. Stefano Pulido, the My Guitar Bandmate, El Sueño de Marinaio with Salida, inspired by Dante. Hi-Fi Club out of Toulon with Siglio and Lauren. I think they're in New York City, this guy. No Safety on a Body. And finally, You Will Rise from Sumo Princess. So, okay, you didn't dig the school thing except that fucking anything you dug. But yeah. a lot of it was challenge. You didn't dig it. Yeah, it was holding pattern. But what about the shit where, like, you're playing with friends after school or in the basement, in the bedroom, or the garage band, that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, I first started playing in a band when I joined the Love Dolls in high school.
Okay,
so
that's
I had never even played bass before.
Now, Love Dolls, I kind of know a little about it because Dave Markey kind of put together a band for a movie, right?
Correct.
So and then I'm not trying to say he's, what's that guy, Don Kirshner making a Monkees. But it was kind of like that, right?
Yeah, I guess it was kind of like the Monkees meets the Runaways or something.
Oh, Kim Crowley, he put that band together too, right.
Or Kim Fowley, I think, put together the Runaways.
Kim Fowley put together the Runaways. Don Kirshner put together the Monkees. And Dave Markey put together the Love Dolls.
Yeah, at least initially, but then there was band sort of became a band.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Monkees, right? It became a life of its own.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if that, even with the Runaways, maybe, because I remember when Jones started singing, it seemed like more their own band, maybe. I don't know, maybe not. But it seemed like, you know, when she became the singer, that was kind of the template for the Blackhearts. I like the Runaways a lot. I'm kind of thinking Dave Markey was thinking a little bit of the Runaways, right?
I would think so. I mean, you'd have to ask him, but I would assume so as well.
Okay, so when he got you in the band, so he didn't really brief you on the movie. He said you guys are just going to be the band for the movie.
No, the band came to exist in the movie, and then when they were on their own, they had Gwen Kelly, Gwen Kahn. She was playing bass, but she wasn't in the movie. And then at a certain point, they got me after that. So Tuesday, I came into it, like, I think after the second movie came out. Jennifer Schwartz. The original lineup that I was in was Jennifer Schwartz, Janet Housden, Kim Pilkington, and myself.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because it went through a few things.
Yeah, and then we had like two more singers after that, and then I left later, and Sharon Needles played bass, and so there were several different sort of lineups of the Love Dolls.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about your version, because that's going to be pertinent to this show right now. The only bass you knew was Left Hand on Fucking Piano, right?
Yeah, but, you know, interestingly, I had a piano teacher that would tell me that I should play bass because I always heard a lot of movement in my left hand. I figure it might have been just loving Paul McCartney so much, but I would always do like descending lines with my left hand. So she thought that I would make a good bass player because that was my area.
But Love Dolls is the first time you actually got a bass guitar in your hands.
Correct. And Kim, the guitar player, said to me, "Don't tell Janet you've never played bass before." She taught me how to play the songs. And the cool thing about it was that on the albums, the Love Dolls soundtracks, Red Cross had played the actual, instruments. So
Steve
the first
McDonald's.
Bass lines I got to learn were like Steve McDonald's awesome bass lines.
Yeah.
So that was really great.
Well, you know, the Monkees kind of, I don't think they played, I think there was some singing from Mickey and some funny-ass Herman Hermit voice from Davy Jones. But I think it was like Carole Kaye and Hal Blaine and shit played on their records.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And then the Love Dolls did release a record that I played bass on, but it sounds terrible.
Down the road.
Yeah, God, it's fucking awful. It's like the worst sounding album.
I can't Red Cross was doing the Linda Blair thing. It was around that period.
Yeah, kind of, I guess, yeah.
And Janet was playing for them, too, right?
Well, that was after, I think, like, Roy was in Red Cross, that she was doing Love Dolls. It's hard for me to keep timelines.
Lindezzo's in the band for a little bit. I think he's during that period, too, kind of.
Kind of, yeah. I'm not great with... By the time I saw Red Cross, I think it was the brothers and... I can't remember who was playing drums. I think it was Roy, or it could have been Dave Peterson, you know, and Robert Heckler.
You know, when I first saw him, it was Ron Reyes. And, of course, you know, just like he did with Black Flag, he quits on stage. Right. And also, Steve, his voice is like when I saw Agent Orange, Mike Palm, you know, the voice hadn't changed yet.
Really?
He still had the little high voice. Well, Steve must have been like 12. He was really little, yeah. And where Mike, I think, was 16 or 17, but Steve was like fucking 12 years old and standing in front of Poser, right? And shit like that, the Posh Boy records. Anyway, okay, with the Love Dolls, you're in the movie, you know, you're playing in the band, but what about gigs and stuff? The Love Dolls did gigs.
Yeah, so I wasn't really in the movies. I mean, I'm an extra in the second movie because the movie, like the first one was shot before, you know, I think I was probably like 11 or, you know, I wasn't, you know what I mean? So, but the cool
what
thing
I
about
was
it is they made a sequel that called Love Dolls Superstar, and the Love Dolls were able to go tour, and then they would show the second movie, and then the band would play. So it was a really, you know, most kind of new bands wouldn't get to go to like New York and Boston and stuff like that. But when I was still in high school, I got to go do that because of the movie. So it was actually a really cool thing.
Ab, I didn't mean the whole arc of the Love Dolls, just your stint. of course, when you were a little girl. Yeah, I understand.
Sorry, but I was just explaining that why I wasn't in the movies.
I'm talking about in your stint. You're playing with the movies when you are playing with these guys. I'm not talking about the Love Dolls.
Initially, and then you know we continued on.
But those were your first gigs.
Yes, those were my first gigs.
Yeah. Now, what were they like?
I thought it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed
it.
I mean, I think
was it like Annie?
Sorry?
Was it like Annie? I mean, you hadn't had any experiences like that, kind of, except for the musical, right?
Yeah, but I wasn't scared. The only time I've ever had stage fright was like singing the national anthem at a roller derby, and then right before the first Cher gig, I was a little like, ah. But other than that, I don't usually get stage fright.
Okay. Not even in the beginning. Okay.
No, I was too young, and everyone, you know, I just thought, like, this is fun. This is great. I get to be in a band. This is awesome, you know?
Okay. You sold me.
And people were, you know, supportive right off the bat. I mean, I remember Dezzo saying, like, wow, you really got something there, you know? And it was people were kind of, like, patting me on the head and going, well, good job, you know? So I was like, cool. You know, I didn't know any better. I was just a teenager.
Right. But I was a teenager and I was scared shitless. Thank God D Boom was there. I mean, everybody's got their own journey through the trip. That's why I'm asking you these things. You know, because I've yet to find two people with the same journey through music. We're at the end of the first hour, Ab. May 6, 2019, Dish Wap Pedro Show. Special guest Ab Travis. Hold tight for hour two. May 6, 2019. It's the second hour of the Wap for Pedro Show. Watt for Pedro show. Start up the second hour with Kali Ma from Sumo Princess. And I've been enlightened to the fact a video is soon coming featuring...
Yeah, and the Kali album comes out on Wednesday.
On the drums.
Yeah.
So I bet you that one doesn't blow up. Makofumi after that with Ping. I guess no vowel. Yeah, when you got a vowel in a word, it's hard.
Unless
you're speaking Hebrew. The Russian. With some of those Polish words, they go a lot of consonants without a vowel. Marco Serrano and Francesco Corino with Baraccio out of Sevilla, Spain, Andalusia, right? If There's Hell Below, We're All Gonna Go, I believe that's a Curtis Mayfield song covered here by the Healers, fellow Illinoisans. Yeah, because Curtis Mayfield, the Impressions, right out of Chicago, I think he was still a teenager. Started his own label then, too. And then finally, Angel Dust from Sumo Princess. And speaking of Dust, it made me think about him hanging out with the Stains and smoking dust. You know, me and D. Boon did that for a month. When it first came out, somebody said, oh, this is pure Mota. And after, you know, this aluminum foil taste in your mouth, I said, D-Boon, this is not Mota.
You're like, whoa.
Yeah, it was the worst feeling in the world. Oh, I went to the first time to talk
to heads. Decision.
So came to West Hollywood, and yeah, we were stupid idiots. yeah, bong and black dust. The talking heads came to the whiskey and fell in some mud and shit and all over my face and everything. I couldn't even feel it because that droga was so hard on, strong on me. It was terrible. But let's talk about between the Love Dolls and Sumo Princess. You had a lot of projects in between. A lot of side mouse stuff.
Yes. A lot of work.
Yeah, now, I mean, you always wanted an Abby Travis band. I know that because you've had several different versions of it. But then maybe it's like going to the head or something. Duty calls. You had to help other people envision their dream.
And
how'd you get into that?
I went to music school when I was in my early 20s. I went to this jazz school.
Okay, so you take your bass stuff that you learn Love Doll songs with, but now you want to, refine it and get to know more?
Yeah, I mean, what happened was I would get so frustrated because I'd have all these ideas in my head and it would take me so long to get them from my brain to my fingers that sometimes I would forget what I was trying to create and it would drive me crazy. Yeah. So I went to music school so that I could facilitate learning and, you know, just getting rid of that synapse physicality delay. And I studied all these jazz changes and all that kind of stuff at this place called the Grove School of Music that actually went bankrupt right after I graduated. And so at that point I thought that I really wanted to make a living as a musician, and that was at that time where there was still some money in music, and since I could all, and I was in this band called The Rails where we would do a lot of three-part harmonies, so I had learned how to sing and play bass pretty well at the same time at that point. So I think because I was young and I could play and sing at the same time and I was a girl, I got a lot of work, you know?
Okay. Did you have that problem playing the piano? Or was it just the bass?
No, playing piano and singing is way easier than playing bass and singing.
I didn't mean that, Ab. I'm sorry. I mean, this idea where you felt frustrated. Why you said you wanted to go to school? Because when you went to school, you focused on bass, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So did you have that? Because you said you were frustrated because you couldn't get these ideas articulated. So did you have that kind of problem? Because you told me you did a lot of your early writing on the piano.
Yeah, well, I still, you know, I mean, almost all the Abby Travis solo stuff I did, I wrote on piano just because I could do the harmony better. You know, you've got five fingers and you can do polychords and stuff. But, you know, I'm not a real chopsy piano player. So I think on piano, I would mostly come up with progressions and then sing on top of them. So that wasn't as hard. Whereas I remember I'd have these ideas for bass lines or things, and it would kind of frustrate me.
I get it now. Like the piano was more of an accompaniment tool for you.
Exactly.
Where you wanted the bass to be like a kind of an explorer music, not accompaniment, but that actually the pioneer part of... Okay, that makes good sense.
Yeah.
What about this tune here, Crooked Plow? Speaking of, like, musical pioneering device.
That one came up, Gene and I were, that one was written a lot through improvisation, which is one thing that I'm really enjoying as a writing process in this band. Like, there's maybe a couple songs on the record that I kind of came in with and was like, this is the song. And then there's other songs that were written largely through jamming. And so, Crooked Plow definitely came that way, where I just recorded us jamming. Then kind of cut and pasted in terms of, like, here's an arrangement, maybe added some parts or extended some things. But the initial, like, that crazy weird intro was in a jam, and the, you know, the first verse. And then I think later on, the whole second half of it that's kind of more like the, almost like, you know, classic rock, like Leonard Skinner-y chord-based part, I think I... No, that I did in the jam, too. And then yeah, so a lot of that came just through improvisation and then just reorganizing it afterwards and obviously writing the melodies over it.
Okay, let's listen.
Give me that old fashioned morphine. Give me that old fashioned morphine. Give me that old fashioned morphine. It's good enough for me. What was good enough for my grandpa? It was good enough for my grandpa. It was good enough for my grandpa. It's good enough for me. Sister, don't get worried. Sister, don't get worried. Sister, don't you get worried. Because the world is almost done. Give me that old fashioned morphine. Give me that old fashioned morphine. Give me that old fashioned morphine. It's good enough for me. It was good enough for Billy Burroughs. It was good enough for Billy Burroughs. It was good enough for Billy Burroughs. It's good enough for me. Sister, don't you get worried. Sister, don't get worried. Sister, don't you get worried. Because the world is almost done. It was good enough for Isabel Eberhard. It was good enough for Isabel Eberhard. It was good enough for Isabel Eberhard. That's good enough for me. Give me that old fashioned morphine. Give me that old fashioned morphine. Give me that old fashioned morphine. It's good enough for me. Sister, don't you get worried. Sister, don't get worried. Sister, don't you get worried. Because the world is almost done. Sister, don't you get worried. Sister, don't get worried. Sister, don't you get worried. Because the world is almost done. Sister, don't get worried. Sister, don't get worried. Sister, don't you get worried. Because the world is almost done.
Walk for Pedro show. Yep, you heard Crooked Plow and the way it was put together. Mini Beast after that. That's got Peter from Mission to Burma. Taff Falco, Morphine. Taff Falco had all his shit stolen in Memphis this morning, people.
Oh.
Yeah, he left it out. He's going to go to the airport and fucking donate. And we're talking about, you know, with his ID and his that violin guitar and passport. And yeah, I'm really fucked. Really fucked. So people can help, please. Love Taff Falco. Round Eye from Shanghai after that with Kenton. Sumo Princess, New Goth. I know Nels Klein would love that title. You know, he's always considered himself a little goth. How did Sumo Princess get together?
Originally, I had another drummer named Chris, and then I wanted to work with someone else, so I asked Gene. You know, he's just a really old friend of mine, and I love his drumming, and he's a great guy. And so I asked him if he wanted to play in the band. And he had seen us play at Pappy and Harriet's and really liked what we were doing, so he was happy to do it.
Well, okay, let's go back with Chris then. I mean, how that...
What happened was I had read about Royal Blood and I watched them on YouTube and thought, fuck, that's a great idea. Why didn't I think of that? So then I, you know, stopped watching them because I didn't want to be too influenced, but just the idea of having a duo band, without having to deal with a guitar player, because I've always had a hard time finding good guitar players that I like. So that, and it was kind of liberating, and I like the idea of having a band with just two people because it's easier to keep it together. It's easier to make money.
More room in the van. More room in the boat.
Yeah.
What about Lightning Boat?
Lightning Boat? Is that a bass and drum band?
Oh, you don't know about them. Yeah. They're for Providence.
You'll have to play them next.
Trippy is the G string, I think, is a guitar E string. But it's like a bass, but except for the G string.
Huh.
And where's another one? Ohm? Have you heard of them?
I've heard of them, but I don't know what they sound like.
It's a Melvins without the guitar.
Ah.
Kind of. But, I mean, you got your own version, but it's interesting. You never heard of Ohm or Lightning Bolt because, for some reason, that's what comes to my mind, right? But you on purpose wanted a drum and bass band.
Yeah. Because I also, my only guitar envy, Mike, has ever been, like, all the pedals and, you know, all the professional, like, side person gigs I've done. You know, maybe I could play a little fuzz in Eagles of Death Metal or something, but usually they're like, please don't make weird noises. And so for me, it was really liberating to just get to fucking paint with the bass. Like, I think a lot of what I'm doing is kind of post bass player. I'm just kind of creating sounds, and I just happen to be playing the bass. You know what I mean? It's not like regular bass playing.
You're playing a pedal board.
Yeah, exactly.
We're at the end of the second hour, May 6, 2019, edition of Wapapito Show. Special guest, Abby Travis, hold tab for hour three. May 6, 2019, it's the third hour of the Wapapito Show.
You make me sick, like the blood being sucked by a tick. Bleed me dry, you're an unswallowable fly. You make me puke, pretend you're my friend and you shoot up like a rocket made of wax. I know the best revenge is happiness and some success. Cowardly and false.
not be the same. Two people laughed. Two people cried. Most people were silent. I remember the line through Hindu scripture, the Bhagavad Gita. Vishnu is trying to persuade the prince that he should do his duty, and to impress him, takes on my armed form. He says, now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. I suppose we all felt that somewhere or another.
Mr. McCarthy, I will not discuss this further with you. You have sat within 6 feet of me and could have asked me about Fred Fisher. You have seen fit to bring it out. And if there is a God in heaven, it will do neither you nor your cause any good. I will not discuss it further. I will not ask Mr. Cole any more witnesses. You, Mr. Chairman, may if you will.
Negative for negative expressing denial or refusal opposed to reflecting the acquisition positive for what for that reason and up to earth simulation in the interest of the favor of the federal and the life of the
Watford Pedro Show. We start off the third hour off air. Me and Ab were talking about some of this stuff. The hate song, how appropriate. And although this is more of a, I don't know. Well, it's got some sentiments. And then the coat hangers with Tonya Harding. Gotta watch out being topical, but we still remember Tonya.
Sure.
Yeah. National Debt with Cold War Ambient Mix. That's Crane up in Idaho. Needle Drop minus four, and then One Hit Wonder from Abby Travis. We're not playing Sumo Princess stuff here, people. This is Abby Travis stuff that she done in the years before. So where did you explain some of the process with Gene? Some was you brought in tunes, some was improvised, and I guess like Miles on the Corner kind of thing where you glued it sections together after the fact. Yeah. And then maybe even added stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the stuff was also written with the first drummer too, improv-wise too. So it depends on what era of Sumo Princess. Although it's not been around that long, but yeah. So it's really liberating to me to write that way because I come up with different stuff. You know, if you listen to my Abby Travis stuff, there's certain motifs. Like there's a lot of 6/4. There's a lot of the same kind of piano things, and it's nice to just write over. It's kind of like if someone sends you a track and you write the melody and the lyrics over the track, you come up with totally different stuff.
Didn't Paul do one of yours?
Paul Rosler?
Yeah.
I think he might be on some of the first record, but I also think Finelli played a lot on that. And Paul played in my band for a while, though.
Well,
for sure.
No, what about producer? He wasn't doing that yet?
No, I've worked with Paul as a producer, just as a bass player for other people.
Okay.
Although I guess technically Geza was producing,
Robot Kitty?
Kitten Robot?
Kitten Robot, is that the name? The studio they got down. It's Josie.
Yeah, it's nice.
Cotton. Josie Cotton's pet, yeah.
Yeah, it's a cool spot.
First it was in Boo, and then we moved it downtown. Yeah, yeah. And Paul, because, I don't know, some of it kind of reminded me of Paul, but also the whole idea of cabaret kind of music a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And I think for me, that whole cabaret thing is really super filtered through, like, David Bowie and Queen.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Yeah.
More England than Germany.
Yeah.
What was the movie? Liza Minnelli, Joel Grant. It was cabaret. It was called cabaret.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. We're not talking so much. That's a scary movie. Jesus Christ. Oh, man. But... No, the whole idea, let's talk about imagery, like the Blue Angel, Marlena Dietrich. This whole kind of thing with the dark nightclub and the piano and the chanteuse, right? The French word for singer.
Chanteuse.
Chanteuse, that's it. Yeah, chanteuse.
William Chanteuse. I think for sure I was very influenced by that stuff for a time, and I love Marlena Dietrich, and I went through a period where I was really into that kind of glamour, like, you know, studio system kind of star aesthetic, and now that I'm older, it's like, fuck it, I can't even pull it off.
Less younger.
Yeah. So, but it was fun for a while. So
What about, Carla Bozulich always remind me a little bit of that thing too. Remember, who were those two ladies? Dresden Dolls.
Oh well, one of them was a guy, but yeah, they.
Oh, that's
they
right. That's right.
Yeah.
And then one was Amanda Palmer, right?
Yeah, Amanda Palmer, and then the other guy. I forgot the name of the guy, but he had that kind of almost like silent film star makeup thing going on. And I do have to say that my first record came out before
I know. I remember. Because, Abby, when that happened, I thought these people must have been listening to you. And a little bit of Carla for some reason. I know Geraldine Fibbers had kind of a country thing, but she always reminded me of part of that angle, too. So
I think that, like, maybe just Carla and the Dresden Dolls and myself, and also there's a gal up in San Francisco named Jill... Stooge, fuck me, Jill, oh my god, she's gonna kill me, I really like her too, Jill Scott, no, anyways, Jill.
Jill Scott Aaron.
Jill Scott Aaron.
Yeah, he's
I think, you know, like, probably there was just some sort of, like, you know, Kurt Vile, brutal thing on the, you know, cultural vibrations that, you know, different people picked up on it about the same time or something.
Yeah, but there was an earlier one, which always tripped me out as a boy. Doors doing, and I never understood about that, but there's something. Okay, I want to play that tune we were talking before that, Lightning Square.
Twice. Lover, I
Watt for Pedro show last music for this edition. Lightning Squared, Abby Travis. And then Julie Slick. This is a bass player friend of Petra Hayden's. I think from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And a tune called Go. She can fucking play. I think she's been playing with Todd Rundgren's Utopia.
Cool.
Which Petra's... I would figure you'd be one of these gigs, too, because Petra's sister Rachel, you know, is a bass. And she did some Utopia. And, this. And who's the other lady I know that does a side mouse for... I think she's with Pink now. Gardner?
Eva Gardner.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys great. You lady bass players are tearing it up. Even though it goes back to Carole Kaye, huh?
Yeah, she was the original, that's for sure.
You know what, though? She didn't really do gigs so much, right? More like jazz gigs after the sessions. But you guys actually get on the stage and tour with people and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole kind of thing went away, but it was huge, I know, in the 60s and 70s. Then we had Croatian here, not so good. Trobakova Kushna Peshi with Gadi Zvetya. What's amazing, this shit was in the early 80s, and it sounds, you know, like Minutemen. You know, we just didn't know what was going on over there, you know. Pretty incredible. Groove Crater Method after that, Black Satin, and then finally, Mr. Here Right Now. And I guess that's a great title for a toilet paper song.
What do you mean by toilet paper song?
Well, you said you got the fucking announcement or notification.
Oh, but that's my husband. He's not Mr. Here Right Now. He's my husband.
No, but like somebody asking for toilet paper, that sounds like Mr. Here Right Now. You know? Remember there was that TV show called Branded? Maybe you're too young.
No.
Anyway, it's about some guy who's been wronged and he's in the Old West and shit. But the theme song was Branded, you know. What do you do when you're branded? Anyway, there was a take on it in school. It was Stranded. Trapped on the toilet bowl. What do you do when you're stranded? You ain't got a roll. Well, prove you're a man. You can wipe it with your hand. You know, Stranded.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. It's the wonders of being young. What's your next plan?
I'm going on the road. I leave tomorrow, and we've got a couple weeks' worth of shows opening up for the Meat Puppets on the East Coast, which I'm very excited about. And the record from which you played a lot of music, When an Electric Storm, comes out on Wednesday, and you can get it at ruinvibes.com in limited edition colored vinyl, as well as at like iTunes and Bandcamp and all that stuff. And then we have a big record release party in Los Angeles on May 26th at the Bootleg Theater with Poppy Jean Crawford, who is actually, remember Perry Farrell's girlfriend Casey back in the day? That's her daughter.
Wow.
Like, I didn't even know. So that's like people's kids are now, you know, same thing with Elmo, I guess.
Yeah, somebody, I think Flea's daughter plays drums or bass or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense. We're old enough to have grandkids practically, so.
Fucking Don Bowles is a great-grandfather.
The horror.
The horror. Yeah, they didn't know how to end that movie. So Marlon, give me that bowl of water. He fucking saves the movie. By basically quoting what's in the Joseph Conrad story.
Yeah.
So he didn't like to memorize lines, I guess. Where can people find you on the internet, Ab?
They can find Sumo Princess on Facebook as Sumo Princess. On Instagram as Sumo_Princess_Band. I'm on Twitter just as Abby Travis in parentheses Sumo Princess. And then there's also Abby Travis, and there's no E. It's just ABBYTRAVIS. I have Instagram and Facebook, and we also have a YouTube channel too, because we're watching this video.
Do you have your own website?
Yeah, that's true. We have sumoprincessband.com.
That to me is very important. Because all these other things, it's fine to put your flyers up on their telephone poles. But you should have your own fanzine with no middle person, no filter. So I'm
good
so
point.
Glad you got your own. So it's Abby Travis. No, it's sumoprincessband.com.
Yeah, and there's also abbytravis.com.
That's right. right.
Sounds Off with Abby Travis. SoundsOffPodcast.com, which is my podcast, which we can talk about another time.
Yeah, I hate that word.
Well, okay.
I got an MP3 file.
I hate the word ointment.
An MP3 file that can be played on many different devices. That's what I call it.
Fair enough.
I don't even think that company makes that machine anymore. So why be a shill for it? It's been a huge honor to have me on. Have me talk to you on my show. Really.
Mike, thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
All the time, all the music, and we finally get to talk about it and show people your musical journey. Good luck to you with the Meat Puppets on this tour. Keep the keel in the water. I know you'll play your brains out. Tell Gene hi for me, okay?
Will do. Thank you so much, Mike.
Okay. People, it's been May 6, 2019, edition of Wat for Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.